Welcome back for another episode of the It's Murder Y'all podcast. I'm your host, Amber, and with me today is a man whose attention span done turned off, my husband, Rob. Say hey, Rob.
Hello, all you fellers and fellettes.
I had to stick with the she's got her daddy's money theme for part two. Yeah. I feel like it was, and that was the only line in the song that I felt like fit because your
Say
attention
one more again. My attention span.
Your attention span done turned off.
Attention span done turned off.
And that is a true statement a lot of the time. Anyway, in the last episode, we covered the 2003 disappearances of Dee Dee Cullens and Marcy Crane, both of whom worked in the real estate industry and disappeared from in or near the Atlanta, Georgia area. So now we're going to go ahead and dive into our last Black and Missing in Georgia case. And I promise to try to chill with the two-part episodes. I'm very wordy. So, Monica Renee Bowie, I've also heard it pronounced Bowie or Bowie, was born on
in
March...
relation to David? I guess not.
So, fun fact. Did you know that his name was not David Bowie?
It's David Bowie?
No, it was David Jones. But there was already Davy Jones from the Monkees. And so, he had to pick a different name. He went with David Bowie after the Bowie knife.
I like it.
The more you know. So Monica Renee Bowie was born.
Big David Bowie fan.
Yeah. All I can think about is him and his
tight purple pants on a labyrinth.
Yeah. That was
also a fire ass movie.
I still don't think I've ever seen the whole movie.
Buddy, I've watched that movie more times than I can remember. And
for
as
his bulge?
Kid, no, for the puppets and the music. That's like, I am not a musical person at all, but I'm very particular about like movies with music, and that one, and weirdly enough, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, I'm okay with.
That's so random.
I know.
And
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang hit for me when I was a kid.
Also, that one movie with is it Rockadoodle?
Oh, yeah, dude. That movie slaps hard. So hard. I loved Rockadoodle. My brother loved Rockadoodle. He can vouch.
That's so funny. I'd never heard of it until I met you.
Bro, that movie is so... you would think most Southern kids would know, because it's like a Southern... I mean, it's basically like an Elvis, a chicken that's Elvis. You know what I mean? Or a rooster, not a chicken. A rooster that's Elvis. And
yeah.
They take him away from the farm, and spoiler alert, he loses his crow, and the sun goes down and the owls start fucking shit up.
That's a lot.
Bro, it's so good.
Yeah, no. I love that we've ADHD'd in the... I haven't even finished the first line. We're going strong. This is gonna be good.
Stay on brand.
So I'm going to say her name again for, I think, the fourth time.
Monica.
Which is good because that way I have choices of which version I want to use in case I don't like the way I said her name. Monica Renee Bowie was born on March 30th, 1974, making her an Aries. Monica grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, with her mama Linda, her stepdaddy James, and her three siblings. Monica graduated from Perry Traditional Academy and went on to attend Cheney University. Fun fact, Cheney University is the oldest of all HBCUs, or historically Black colleges and universities, in the country, which I think is really cool. Monica earned a bachelor's degree in accounting, and she graduated as valedictorian of her college class. Monica was clearly an excellent student who is a little bit of a perfectionist, as most excellent students are, and she had big dreams for success. The first step towards chasing those dreams was to move to the ATL, peace up, A-town down. In Atlanta, Monica moved in with her best friend, Danielle Sparks, and started working to build her event planning and promotion business, which she called Go-To Girl. To help fund her business venture, Monica took on a temporary side job as a stripper at the Blue Flame Lounge, which, if you think about it, it's pretty smart considering that she was trying to start like a promotion company. And if you're going to strip, I feel like Atlanta is the place to do it, especially back in the mid-2000s when she was dancing, because I'm sure there was no shortage of rappers and athletes and businessmen. Like, everybody was coming around back then. Also, if we ever get a Patreon, I'm going to tell the story of the night I went to a strip club in Birmingham and almost died. So anyway,
oh boy.
Yep, one night at work.
I remember being mildly irritated.
You were. a lot of unsafe choices were made that evening, but I didn't die. I just thought I was gonna.
You're safe in my presence always, but out of my presence, a lot of it is up to your decision making. That night, it failed a couple times.
So we're gonna take a side tangent, but this one is true crime related. So I was listening to a podcast the other day, and I can't remember which one it is because I listened to a lot of them. And they were talking about this case of this serial killer. Well, they don't know if he's a serial killer. This killer who, what he had done was he would like flag girls down as they're driving on the interstate and tell them that something was wrong with their car and they'd pull over. And I was thinking, my gullible ass would think there was something wrong with my car and I'd pull over and I'd get murdered.
Well, the first, I don't want to go on a tangent, but for me as a man, I would just start looking in my mirrors around my car and be like, yo, what's up? And immediately my brain would go, does it feel like there's anything wrong? Is this son of a bitch smoking? Is that son of a bitch smoking? What is going on here? You know what I mean? Like,
Now that I think about it, it might have been the crime and coffee couple. I like them. And I think that the husband may have said that exact same thing of like, but does it feel like something's wrong?
yeah.
But I don't know. I don't pay
Well,
attention.
if when I say like, I would say if it doesn't feel the car in motion doesn't feel smooth and normal like it feels, if there's any kind of weird vibration, if there's any kind of ticking or thumping noises or smells, weird strong smells or smoke, other than that, just keep driving.
There were some ladies that they did that and they said he got real pissed and he was like yelling and cussing at him and stuff, which I really don't like that. That has
Yeah, any
happened.
dude that gets aggressive with women is turns out a red giant red flag.
That reminds me
Any
of
dudes that like red vein in their neck yell at women is, yeah.
that reminds me. I saved a TikTok the other day to show you and I forgot, but it was a podcast, not a true crime podcast, but a different podcast of people talking and someone made the point of like, as a man, you'll never experience what a woman experiences with men because men act so differently with other men. Like if another dude is around, dudes are going to act way different than they act if they are the only man.
True, but the kind of dudes that, in my opinion, you're kind of talking about, the kind of dudes that act a certain way around women that act different when men are around. The dudes that are at least not shitty dudes, but not like white knight dudes, but just like your average dude who's just not a piece of shit like that, is gonna, that dude's on their radar automatically. Like dudes that aren't shitty to women, I feel like, or shitty men in general. Notice that shit. They pick up on guys. Most, I don't know. I'm very intuitive in that nature, so I pick up on shit like that in dudes anyway. If a dude has weird vibes, or if I see him act a certain way around a lady, or in general, or just like maybe if like for example, if like I'm around a dude and I'm like, oh, this dude's cool, but he kind of lingers when like when he ogles when women walk by or whatever. If he tries to catch a glance and he's just like, you know. Or he's like doing it a whole bunch. You know what I mean? I don't know. Little tiny things like that. Just dudes that are like, I don't know. It seems aggressive. You know what I mean? Any
Right.
type of aggressive. You don't have to like talk disrespectful, but like being like a little overly pervy. You know what I mean? I feel like if, it, I don't know. It's like a microaggression, as you would call it, that I think could lead to a dude being disrespectful.
Yes, and that's why it's so important that dudes that aren't shitty.
Very big blanket statement for me. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm just a man.
Yes. 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 No, but for dudes that aren't shitty dudes, it's y'all's responsibility to call out the shitty dudes. You've got to use your male privilege. Otherwise, you're co-signing on their behavior.
Yeah. I mean, there is a level. Like if it's I'm out in the public and it's just out in the wild, there is a level of whatever is going on that I know in my head. I'm like, son of a bitch. I'm gonna look around for a second to see if there's any other guy, large man willing to step in, and maybe it ain't gotta be my business that day. But there's a certain at a certain point, I know for me as who I am as a person that, damn it, I'm gonna go have to jump on this fool.
Because again, what you have to realize is that if you
And people
see,
shoot people, and that's a bummer, but
that is
I
true.
won't tolerate shit like that.
Like if you see a dude being shitty, like as a man, if you see a dude being shitty, just know, like we just talked about a second ago, he's going to be significantly worse when there aren't other dudes around.
Yeah.
So that's why it's so important. We are very off track. Anyways,
Yep.
back to
Sorry.
Monica. So Monica has started dancing at the Blue Flame Lounge, and she had told her mama, like, she'd been like, hey, I'm just doing this to make a little money. And again, it's smart. Based on the career that she wanted, it was a way
Hey
to
man, don't hate
keep.
the hustle.
Right. Like, if I'd had the body, I sure would have stripped. Maybe
Yeah.
that's why I wasn't given that body, because God was like, you need to keep your clothes on. Also, our daughter asked me yesterday what a stripper was, or what a strip club was, because I was listening to that Ashley McBride CD, the Lindyville, and there's a song on it called Gospel Night at the Strip Club. So I'd explain to her what a strip club was. So now she knows what that is. So
how'd that go down?
It was fine. I told her that guys are weird and they will pay money to see the ladies take their clothes off.
Ah, she asked me what ED was.
I had my headphones on. So that commercial. So for y'all wondering, we watch Bob's Burgers, only the PG episodes. And we watch it on Hulu. And it's like the same commercials over and over again. And there's one that talks about ED. And every time I'm like, please don't ask me what that is.
Well,
Please
she
don't ask.
definitely asked me.
I heard. I forgot to tell you that because I had my
Bro,
head.
I brushed it off like a
You have
G.
to.
Like a
Yeah.
G. And I was like, ah, it's just some stuff that just problems dudes have to deal with sometimes.
That's weird. I
She
mean,
goes,
you.
okay. I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah. She's funny.
Nah, I
Okay.
nailed it.
So, Monica.
Monica. Sorry, Monica.
One.
We're just disrespecting your shit today.
Yes. So, one night at work, Monica meets a businessman named Mark Canty, who's involved in real estate.
Everybody in Georgia than real estate, turns out.
Yes. And he also worked in the local music scene, which I
I
feel
know
like.
two people that in Georgia that actually both dabble in real estate.
Well, there we go. So yeah, he did real estate and the local music scene, which I feel like also if a lot of people in Atlanta, they do something and also something in the music scene. But this is our third real estate connection, because remember, Dee Dee and Marcy also both worked in the real estate industry. So let's go ahead with another It's Murder Y'all PSA slash life rule. Maybe don't work in real estate in Atlanta if you're a woman. And as we know, also don't be a Hardee's manager in Alabama if you're a woman, because it doesn't end well. So Mark and Monica chatted up and he learns that she has an accounting degree. So he hires her to do his accounting. Inevitably, the two start dating and they eventually get engaged. Now, Monica only stripped for like 3 to 4 months. And then so she got the money that she needed to start her business, Go-To Girl, as well as a clothing boutique called Le Coco Wear Clothing. Monica gradually started giving more and more of her time and attention to her businesses, which took a toll on her relationship with Mark, and the two ended up breaking up. In 2006, Monica moved to an apartment in the Berkshires at Lenox Park, now known as Atrium at Lenox Park. Her apartment complex was located in Brookhaven, which is either like part of or adjacent to Buckhead. Now, Buckhead, if you're not super familiar with Georgia, Buckhead is a very affluent suburb of Atlanta and has been named one of the wealthiest communities in the South. It has been home to celebrities from Elton John to Tyler Perry to Kenny Rogers to Cardi
Elton
B.
John lived in ATL,
He
bro.
did for a while, yeah.
Let's go.
Yep.
Elton
And
John, another one of my just love his shit.
yeah, so
Anyway, continue. Sorry.
you be loving like
Elton, bro, Elton John
70s, 80s.
is goated for sure. No doubt about it. He is one of the all-time greats.
Your daughter loved his Christmas song, because
She did.
it was in one of those commercials that happens on Hulu while we're watching Bob's Burgers. I had never heard it because my mother listened to Kenny G, Michael Bolton, The Carpenters, and 90s country. So I'm well versed, as we know, in the 90s country. So a bunch of rich people lived in Buckhead, and the Berkshires at Lenox Park, which is where like her apartment complex is, about 2 miles from the Lenox Square Mall, which is fancy as shit.
Yeah.
They've got a Balenciaga store, a Prada store, a Tiffany store. They've got the only, from what I can tell, they've got the only Bloomingdale's in the Southeast, and they've got a Neiman Marcus. Do you want to know the closest Neiman Marcus to us? It's the one in the Lenox Square Mall
Oh.
in Atlanta that we're talking about. Do you want to know where the second closest Neiman Marcus is?
Where?
The South Park Mall in Charlotte, which was that fancy ass mall we went to when we
Oh,
that
bro,
time
that's
we
when we went into
Tiffany
Tiffany's.
and
Yeah.
we pretended like we were rich and we're looking for an engagement ring, so I got to
We
try on a
said that
Tiffany.
walking in there. You know, let's go in here and act like we got some money, bro.
We did. That was fun times because we was broke as a joke, but I got to try on a Tiffany ring.
That's very funny.
Yeah,
That was
so
a good day.
it was a good day. I loved living in Charlotte.
I would
Maybe,
definitely do it again.
yeah, we should. That should be our next state that we move to. But yeah, so moral of that story, only the fanciest malls get a Neiman Marcus, because you know that was a fancy ass mall.
You know, that was. I remember seeing Porsches and Ferraris, and you being like, "I don't. Is that like a good car?" And I'm like,
I'm not that
it's a
stupid.
pretty good car, bud."
No, I'm not
I'm
that
not
dumb.
just. I'm not. I just remember gawking at a lot of vehicles, being like, "Yo."
I feel like that mall makes the Summit in Birmingham look like Walmart.
Oh yeah, for sure. For
It's
sure.
hella fancy. So, as if we've not already gone on several side tangents, we're about to go on a quick, maybe not quick, but we're going to go on a Lenox Square Mall side quest. So, I don't know how many of our listeners live in, near, or around Georgia, but I need to know if anyone else experienced Christmas at the Lenox Square Mall in the 80s or 90s, specifically Priscilla the Pink Pig. Stay with me. Up until 1991, at Christmas, the richest department store in the Lenox Square Mall had this train that you could ride, and it was pink and had the face of a pig on it. And the pig's name was Priscilla the Pink Pig. I'm saying P words a lot for someone that does not have one of those spit screen things for their microphone. So I'm sorry if you're hearing a lot of hard P's.
Easy with the hard peas, bud.
Anyways, please tell me that somebody remembers this. Please, I need some human. If you know me, if you don't know me, our email address, don't email me because I won't check it, but DM me on Instagram. It's Murder Y'all. I need to know if you know what I'm talking about. So I think I visited Priscilla twice. Like I have my, as Rob knows, I have my very own stuffed Priscilla the Pink Pig. And let me tell you, she has seen some things.
She got some miles on
She's got 35 years worth of hugs and snuggles on her and a
her.
mysterious stain from the early 90s. So she's a little crusty, but my child and I both love her. I don't
She's a
actually
real
remember.
cute little pig.
I love her. I don't actually remember getting Priscilla because I think that happened sometime in like the late 80s and I wasn't making conscious memories yet. But I do remember riding the Priscilla train when it was temporarily moved to the children's hospital. I remember, so my, y'all, no one cares when I say it anyways. My Uncle Butch lived in Atlanta. Pretty sure he was a drag queen, but it was like a secret. I don't know why I love drag queens, putting it on the record. But
Oh, yeah.
he worked at the Atlanta Mart and he, Christmas was his thing. And so we went and he like took us around. And I just remember it was so much fun. And there were all these crafts and I got to see like Priscilla the Pig shit. And they had like this sand and you took, made different colored sand. I don't know. It was a lot for a kid. I loved it. And I just need to know if someone else experienced it because I kind of feel like it was a fever dream. So I will post a picture of Priscilla's dusty, crusty, musty self on the Instagram like I did Betty. And again, if you or anyone that you know is familiar with Priscilla the Pink Pig, please comment or DM so I don't feel like I'm living just in an alternate reality. And I'm mad at myself because I'd always said that when I had kids, I was going to take them and then I didn't. And now they don't do it anymore. That's one casualty of COVID. Well, one of many casualties of COVID that I'm pretty bummed out about. Freaking Priscilla. Our kid would love that.
Yeah.
I failed. Anyway, back to Monica. So Monica is living life in Buckhead, being a girl boss, and she meets a guy named Shernada Walters, better known as Rico. Things move pretty fast, and the two end up getting engaged in 2007, which her mama Linda was not super jazzed about. She said in a later interview, quote, "I thought he was a little too young, a little too immature, and a little too in the street life for her. She wasn't a street life girl," end quote. I feel like that's me. I ain't a street life
You are
girl.
not a street life
I
girl.
don't know if you can tell from the voice, or for those of you that know me, just looking at me, I'm not a street life girl. As it turns out, Rico had actually served time on
Ain't
drug
no
trial.
girl dinner in the streets.
Nope. Speaking of, my TV dinner wasn't enough, so when we're done, I'm about to eat some Oreos about it. So, as it turns out, Rico had actually served time on drug charges 2 years before he met Monica. So I feel like Linda maybe had every right to be concerned because I know I'd be pretty not jazzed if our kid came home with someone that had served time for drug charges. So,
Yeah, it'd be a bummer.
on June 20th, 2007, Rico wants to go get a haircut. So he asks Monica if he can borrow her car so he can drive down to the barber shop. She's like, "Yeah, of course." So Rico leaves and heads to the barber shop, which makes me think of that time that you borrowed my Sorento in Charlotte. Well, I took a nap. And you had to wake me up to tell me that you had gotten in a wreck and
That
crushed
lady.
the front of Sally Sorrento. And then I had to call my mama and tell my mama that you crushed the front of Sally Sorrento. And then I had
Well,
to
I
drive
didn't
around.
crush it. The lady shortcut the corner, and I just couldn't hit the brakes in time. She just didn't, she wasn't paying attention. And then, anyway, yeah, that was a very bad day. I was very, because I always made a point to drive very safe in the Sorrento,
I miss
because
Sally Sorrento.
I knew that it would be an issue if I put a dent in it. And I was so disgusted.
That
I
was
did fix it like a boss, kinda. For what?
I mean, it was better than it
For
was.
free. For free, it looked pretty good.
Yeah, because I had to drive around in that for the next 3 years until I was pregnant with our kid. And my daddy was like, nope, my baby's not driving that car. It's not safe. Here's a different one. My daddy for the win. So Rico wants a haircut. He asks if he can borrow Monica's car. Don't know why he doesn't have a car, but oh well. She's like, yeah, you can borrow my car. So Rico leaves and heads to the barber shop. So in this situation, what I'm about to tell you, I much prefer the getting the front end of Sally Sorrento squished as opposed to what's about to happen. So Rico leaves, goes to the barber shop. He's hanging out near the barber shop when a police officer walks by and claims that he smells a strong odor of marijuana. The cop searches the car that Rico had been driving, which, as we know, is Monica's car. And in that car, he finds weed, a gun, and some cash. So Rico tells it first, okay, I don't know nothing about drugs or being in trouble. Is smelling weed enough probable cause for them to be able to search?
Absolutely.
That seems,
Absolutely.
I feel like that's a little bit of a constitutional loophole. Like that,
Well,
because anyone can be like, I smell.
ganja smells very specific. You know what I mean? So, like, if you smell it, if it's you smell what you in your brain, if you know for sure what it smells like and you've smelt it before, when you smell it, you know, oh, that smells like some Zaza.
Zaza.
As the kids call it.
I had no, I've heard that before, but I didn't know that's what that was.
Yeah.
I'm such a freaking nerd. No, but
Or
like
loud, some of that loud. And
that
that's why they
tracks.
call it that. You know, it's smell, it's very, it's a, you know, we, everyone knows what weed smells like, dude. You know what I mean? So that's why I feel like that's why it is such a, they use it so much as probable cause. You know what I mean? Because it's like, I mean, I slid a car off into a ditch having a flat tire, and a cop came over and he was like, "Hey, have you been smoking weed?" And I'm like, "Dude, it is 5 o'clock in the morning and I'm headed to this asphalt plant a mile down the road. What? No." And he was like, "Oh, you kind of smell." I'm like, "Dude, I'm in the grass in the ditch here. Like, what do you think of just rolling around smoking a J in the ditch with my car? Like, what do you want?"
I mean
He's,
that
"I'm just checking, buddy."
there probably are people, but my point is that if it's based on smell, somebody could lie, be like, "Oh, I smelled something."
Oh, well, they do.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like that sounds like a constitutional loophole.
I'm sure it is on
Yeah,
some levels.
and also like because you could get into like profiling issues. Anyways, cop smell says he smells marijuana, finds weed and a gun and money in the car. Rico tells the cop, "Hey, it's not my car." And the cop's like, okay, well, you need to call the owner of the car. So Rico gets arrested and Monica comes down to the police station. Now, I want to add here that there were some discrepancies about whether Monica came to where the car had been parked or if she'd gone to the police station, but I'm going to go with the police station based on an interview that I watched. So Monica goes to the police station thinking she's going to pick up her car. And the cops are like, do you know anything about the drugs or the gun that were in your car? And she's like, no, of course not. But they arrest her anyway and charge her with drug and weapon possession. You do not want to know what would happen if that happened. You
What
would
do you
want
mean?
them to keep your ass in jail because if in a different alternate dimension,
Oh, there was guns and
you will be safe from the jail.
arrestable amounts of weed, because it depends on where you're at in the country, obviously, but like typically weed's a misdemeanor. It's like under a certain, I don't know the amount or any of that shit, but
I
like
read it in a Reddit thread. I don't remember. It was
I think
like,
if you have a, basically, if you have only have a small amount, then it's kind of up to their discretion and whatever local laws there are. They can just make you throw it out on the ground, or they just get rid of it, or you know what I mean, or stomp it. You know what I mean? I've seen cops, make somebody just throw it on the ground and stomp on it and smush it all into the ground. You know what I mean?
Good on them.
So
Yeah.
I think it varies, but typically if you have a little, no
I
big deal.
don't,
If you have a lot,
yeah, I
problem.
don't, based on more things you're going to learn, I don't think it was a little bit. But
It doesn't sound like it was a little bit. If a cop walked by, just walked by the car and was like, yo, I smelled the Zaza.
and like, you're killing me. Like, Monica's always been a good girl. So I'm going to believe in my naivete that she had no idea, that she just like, fiance is to borrow my car. So again, like, I would, oh my God, you don't even want to know how it.
Even if I was rolling around with a backpack full of Za, I am not stupid enough to go, hey, babe, I'm gonna use your car for a little while. And then I would use my own vehicle.
Right? Like, I've worked very hard to not ever get in trouble. Like, that's who I am. And if I got in trouble for some shit I didn't do, at a minimum, I'm ruining some of your shit when I get home. At a minimum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've experienced multiple times of getting in trouble for shit that I didn't do. So I am not a fan of it either.
Yeah, no, that is not cool. So since Monica had no criminal history, they let her go. Like, she was arrested. She was charged. Rico had to stay in jail, though, because by having a gun, he had violated the terms of his parole because he was a felon and felons can't have guns. So Monica decides to get an attorney to help with that whole kerfluffle, and she hires Gerald Griggs. He was actually the one who did the interview that I mentioned a minute ago. On July 5th, about 2 weeks after the arrest, Monica had a meeting with Gerald. And according to him, things seemed fine. She wanted to do whatever she could to get this whole situation behind her so that she could just move forward with life. Meeting with the attorney ended at about 4 o'clock, and Monica headed home. So later that evening, Monica went to dinner, and a friend dropped her off in the parking deck of her apartment complex at around 11 o'clock. And again, I'm going to reiterate that this apartment complex is in like Buckhead, which is a very rich suburban area. Okay. Shortly after the friend left, witnesses heard a woman screaming and saw a reddish color Mercury Sable speeding out of the parking lot. They called 911 and police were able to get there within minutes, again, because it's an upscale area. Like, police gonna come because this is out of the norm. So when they get there, they find clear signs of a struggle. On the ground was a woman's jacket, some jewelry, a manila folder, a broken perfume bottle, a container of chicken wings, some eyeglasses, two broken fingernails, and several pieces of paper with Monica Bowie's name on them. I can speak to the fingernails specifically. I don't know if they were broken like they were her natural nails and got broken, because that shit hurts. But if they were acrylics and that shit got broken, bruh, you don't know pain like having an acrylic nail break or get ripped off. Because I wore them for a long time. One time I accidentally, like, I don't know how I did it, but like, I hit my nails straight onto the wall. I had to just like lay down for a minute. It hurt so bad. So if she had acrylics and two of those bad boys fell off, shit was hurting and she was like putting up a fight for real. Police immediately began interviewing witnesses who said they'd seen two suspicious looking men, a heavy set black man with a beard who looked to be about 20 to 30 years old, and then a small, darker skinned black man in his late 20s to early 30s. They also mentioned that the Mercury had been sitting in the parking lot earlier that day, and one of the witnesses memorized the license plate, which was very helpful information to have. Now, please join me as we embark on another side tangent. It's late spring of 2002, and I'm riding with my friend who had just recently gotten her driver's license. So we drove to Weaver, Alabama to cover her boyfriend's car in Post-it notes. I don't know why we did it. We lived in a small town. There wasn't shit to do. Then we decided that we were going to drive to the McDonald's in Jacksonville, Alabama, because we had a friend that worked at the McDonald's who would give us extra fries. So we've gotten our extra fries. We're on Pelham Road, headed back towards Alexandria, and we are stopped at the light that is like, you know where the Pizza Hut is in Jacksonville? It's close to that like big old,
Yes.
yeah. So we're stopped at that light, and suddenly we feel a tap and like we get moved forward a little bit. And as it turns out, a dude had just hit us from behind. And so instead of getting out and doing the whole like insurance thing, the dude just drives off. And my friend's like, write down his license plate. And I'm like, I don't have anything to write it with. So I decided to commit his license plate to memory. And here we are 21 years later, and I can't tell you what I had for lunch yesterday or where my phone is half the time. But I can tell you that that license plate on hit and run dude's car was 11A739Y.
That's
Also,
funny.
he didn't do any damage to the car, so we didn't actually need the license plate number, but If we'd had to use it, I would have been ready. So basically, if someone gets kidnapped, I'm definitely the person that you want to have around to remember the license plate number. And it was very thankful that they had someone there that day that could also randomly remember strings of numbers. So, in addition to interviewing witnesses, police began canvassing the area and they saw a guy that they thought seemed a little sketchy. And so they pulled him over as he was leaving the apartment's parking deck. The guy was 27-year-old Lonnie Bennett, who, according to one source, had, quote, been in and out of Fulton County Jail on narcotics charges as well as theft and sexual battery charges, end quote. Inside the car, police find a large paper bag full of cash. They wouldn't say how much was in the bag, only that it was a large amount. Police brought Bennett in for questioning, and they learned that he was actually a friend of Shernada Rico Walters, Monica's fiance. On July 6th, the day after Monica was kidnapped, the mysterious reddish Mercury was found torched and abandoned near the Hunter Hills Baptist Church, just west of downtown Atlanta. As it would turn out, the 2002 Burgundy Mercury Sable had been reported stolen by a man named Tyrone Crawford. According to Tyrone, he had lent his car to his friend Jasper Keels on July 4th, but Jasper never brought it back. Instead, he set it on fire and left it on the side of the road. He did like a set it and forget it. And here's my question. Why would you burn a borrowed car unless you were A, real pissed at the person that lent you that car, or B, you did something sketchy in that car and you were trying to hide the evidence? Like, that is a weird turn of events. Hey, I borrowed your car and then I set it on fire. Sucks for you. So, police arrest Jasper Keels on July 7th for stealing the car. A couple days later, as he was leaving court, reporters swarmed Jasper and asked if he had anything to do with Monica's disappearance. He responded, quote, I've got a dislocated shoulder and a bad hip. How can I kidnap somebody? End quote. So at this point, we've got two suspects, right? We've got Lonnie Bennett, the sketchy guy with the bag of cash who knows Rico. We've got Jasper Keels, the dude who'd been in possession of the car that sped away from the scene of Monica's kidnapping. But what about Monica's fiance, Rico? As we know, the significant other is always suspect number one. Well, Rico was still in jail from the drug and weapons charges back in June, so he couldn't physically have done it, but could he have orchestrated it? Or at the very least, could he know who did it? Monica's mama, Linda, went to the jail to talk to Rico. Linda said, quote, he looked me in my face and said, I didn't do anything and I really don't know anything. And I said, but I don't believe you, end quote. Interestingly enough, though, other reports I read said that Monica's family does not believe that Rico was involved, so I'm not sure where they actually stand on the matter. So we may have ruled out Monica's current love interest, but what about her former fiance, Mark Canty? Well, first, I need to let y'all know that I only found one source that even mentioned Mark existing in the context of Monica, and it was through a show I found on YouTube that had interviews with her family. Mark Canty is a real person. Like, I found him online. So I'm inclined to believe that he was involved in her life, especially since Linda mentioned him by name in her interview. And again, Linda is her mama. So if her mama's talking about him, obviously he existed. Anyway, police wanted to talk to Mark because, as it turns out, he had a criminal history. In 2006, he had been involved in a multi-million-dollar real estate scheme. Monica's mama, Linda, acknowledged that she knew about Mark's sketchy past and said that, quote, I honestly feel that Monica was put in danger when she first met Mark. But that was his lady, so he was going to do anything possible to protect her, end quote. As far as we know, none of the four persons of interest has really led to anything substantial, and the case quickly turned cold. One reason might be the lack of coverage on the case. Shocker, right? Kidnapping cases are actually pretty rare, with only about 4% of missing persons cases being classified as a kidnapping or an abduction. And in the upscale Buckhead area, it was even more rare. Lieutenant Tom Stewart of the DeKalb County Police, also, side note, people not from the South that say DeKalb, I'm like, you need to stop. You need to go on YouTube and you need to look up how to pronounce DeKalb because it ain't DeKalb.
DeKalb.
DeKalb. Just like, here's a pro tip. If you're from the South, you say Atlanta, not Atlanta. We don't be saying all them T's. Anyways, so Lieutenant Tom Stewart of DeKalb County Police Department said, quote, I can say probably 10 times maybe in my career that I've worked a true kidnapping, end quote. So you have this woman being kidnapped, which is already rare, in the fancy schmancy rich ass area of Atlanta, yet it's getting pretty much no airtime. You want to know which Georgia missing persons case had gotten a metric fuck ton of airtime 2 years prior to Monica's disappearance? Jennifer Wilbanks, better known as the runaway bride. So I don't know if you remember this, but
Some white lady.
she was reported missing from Duluth, Georgia in April of 2005, 4 days before she was supposed to get married. And her face was plastered everywhere. There was a nationwide search. Everybody was like, oh my God, what's happening? So a couple of days after she went missing, Jennifer called her fiance and was like, "Oh my God, I was kidnapped, but they just let me go." And so they were able to trace a 911 phone call that she had made, and they found her at a 7-Eleven in Albuquerque, New Mexico. She was later interrogated by FBI agents and admitted that she had lied. She had not, in fact, been kidnapped. She just needed time and space to escape the pressures of her upcoming wedding. Insert eye roll.
One way to do it.
Yep. Although Jennifer was only missing for like 4 days, she continued to get media attention well after that. I feel like this is, again, another instance of missing white woman syndrome, where the media focuses on missing white ladies, but completely ignores missing Black, Indigenous, and other women of color. It's also worth pointing out that while Jennifer was ultimately charged with a felony, she did not receive any jail time. Instead, the judge recommended that she be sentenced to 2 years of probation, 120 hours of community service, continue to seek mental health treatment, and pay the sheriff's office a little over $2,500. Now, let's compare that to Carly Russell, the Black woman who faked her own kidnapping earlier this year. Carly was charged with two misdemeanors, one for false reporting to law enforcement and one for falsely reporting an incident. But Carly was sentenced to a year in jail and to pay nearly $18,000 in restitution. I feel like those are two very wildly different sentences for two very similar crimes. It's interesting how that works out. I can't put my finger on what the difference may be.
Yeah.
So going back to Monica's case, in an article from Creative Loafing, which is basically a website that covers all things Atlanta, Art Harris, a two-time Emmy Award-winning investigative journalist who worked at CNN for 13 years, got real about missing white woman syndrome in the media. He acknowledged that, yeah, TV news producers really do prefer blonde, blue-eyed victims, and they're, quote, less inclined to go all out to cover victims whose plight might appear ambiguous, the result of their own reckless or criminal behavior, end quote. Sadly, the fact that Monica had been a stripper and she'd been arrested were turnoffs to the media. Art Harris told Creative Loafing, quote, she's as deserving a human being as anyone, but her story isn't an easy sell to TV producers. That could change fast if the investigation reveals she's a clear-cut damsel in distress victim, end quote. And as we know from our previous conversation about missing white woman syndrome, it's all about being an innocent damsel in distress, but the media and a good portion of our society have a very narrow view of who qualifies as a damsel in distress and, by extension, who deserves attention, which is bullshit. So, despite the uphill battle, Monica's mama, Linda, did everything she could do to get people to care about her daughter. As Art Harris noted in his chat with Creative Loafing, the family's public response to a kidnapping is a critical factor in determining what kind of coverage it will receive, saying, quote, this is going to sound sick, but they've got to be loud and market her life and convince the media that she deserves to be loved as much as they love her. People who can figure out how to work the system get much better results, end quote. Which, that line...
How many people know how to work the system?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. So, sadly, despite Linda's best efforts, the case got very little attention, quickly ran cold, and is still unsolved. Now, like many other desperate mamas, Linda turned to psychics and hoped that they could provide answers to what happened to her daughter. Well, she reached out.
Sounds like a money pit.
Yeah, she reached out to psychic twins, Jean and Suzanne Vincent. The Vincent sisters went to the apartment complex where Monica had been kidnapped. Jean said that she felt fear when she was there. And when she was at the gates of the complex, she could see the perpetrators going through the gates. Her sister, Suzanne, was confident that Monica, quote, knew the person, that they knew of her, or there is some kind of connection, end quote. Jean added, quote, she recognized her abductors, and she knew exactly what this meant. I'm probably not going to come home tonight, end quote. The sisters then went to the spot where the car was found, and they said they sensed a violent struggle. Suzanne felt that, quote, it was almost as if she knew something, or they wanted something, and she just couldn't give it to them, end quote. Jean felt that Monica, quote, was fighting for her life, and she was talking for her life. She was convincing them, let me go, end quote. Now, I believe in shit like psychics and intuitives and people that can see ghosts and shit, but I feel like these ladies are full of it. Like, everything they said was basically common sense, and nothing that a true crime baddie, or like really anyone that has watched a few episodes of Forensic Files or Unsolved Mysteries or Dateline, couldn't have immediately surmised. Like, I don't like when supposed psychics take advantage of families who are desperate for any help they can get. Like, that's shitty. Because, again, I mean, we've met a person that can, like, see ghosts and shit. I believe those people exist, and I don't think that they're out there scamming people, scamming grieving families. It's just, that should not be a thing. So, as I said, this case is still unsolved, but I want to let y'all know what our suspects have been up to see if you think that may lead us to where we think Monica may be. So In 2012, Monica's fiance, Shernada Rico Walters, was charged for his part in a multi-year drug trafficking and money laundering conspiracy. So this is about 5 years after she went missing. According to a statement released by the FBI, from January 2003, so that was 4 years before she went missing, to February of 2010, 3 years after she went missing, the organization was responsible for distributing more than 800 kilograms of cocaine and more than 1,000 kilograms of marijuana. I don't know shit about the metric system or drugs.
That's like,
is it a lot?
That's a shitload.
Okay. See, that is a measurement that I can understand. So basically, weed and cocaine were trafficked from Mexico to Houston, Texas, and then people like Rico would go to Houston and then distribute the drug to their respective areas. So again, I don't know shit about drugs, but I would imagine that Rico had to have been pretty high up the organization's food chain if he was one of the ones taking the drugs directly from Houston to Atlanta. And he was one of like 12 people arrested with the like kingpin. So that makes me think, oh, you were high up on that hierarchy there. I couldn't find any updates on Lonnie Bennett, the guy with a big bag of cash, but a lot of people on the interwebs are pretty confident that his connection to Rico was through the drug organization. Jasper Keels, the guy who torched the getaway car, was charged with Monica's kidnapping in September of 2007, but they must have dropped the charges because I couldn't find anything related to a trial. Plus, he continued to have run-ins with the law. In April 2018, Keels was arrested in Covington, Georgia, after a police officer recognized the car he was driving as one that had a bolo out on it for being involved in multiple armed robberies. Two police officers pulled the car over and were talking to Keels and his passenger, both of whom gave fake names, which, bruh, they're going to check your shit. And now you're going to be more trouble for lying. People are stupid. Mm-hmm. So they gave fake names. All of a sudden, Keels gunned it, which then led to a high-speed chase. He eventually pulled over, jumped out of the car, and tried to run, but his dumbass was quickly caught, and he was charged with giving a false name, felony fleeing, attempting to elude law enforcement, obstruction of officers, possession of cocaine, and driving with a suspended license. Then, in 2021, Keels was arrested for the shooting death of 61-year-old Michael A. Collier at a Discount Food Mart in Atlanta. So I'm going to assume that he's in prison. Couldn't find anything else out about him. Now, finally, we have Monica's ex, Mark Canty. As I mentioned earlier, he'd been involved in a multi-million dollar real estate scheme. What I failed to mention, though, is that it was the largest mortgage fraud scheme in Georgia's history. The scheme defrauded lenders out of more than $10 million. But because prosecutors or somebody dragged their asses, which violated Mark and his co-defendant's Sixth Amendment right to a speedy trial, the charges were eventually dropped in 2011.
Wow.
According to an article from the Athens Banner-Herald, Mark was then arrested in December of 2012 and charged with two counts of insurance fraud for filing false claims involving pre-existing damage to his vehicle. The article also detailed the logistics of the mortgage fraud that Mark had originally been involved with. Now, because I don't understand real estate, I don't really understand how to explain what was going on. But it seemed to me like Mark was involved in the same shit that Marcy Crane had been involved in the previous case. So, could Mark have been involved with or have knowledge of the disappearance of both Monica Bowie and Marcy Crane? As it stands, it doesn't look like anyone else has made that connection, but you've got to admit, it's an interesting coincidence because she was doing the same shit he was doing. What if he's Carl? Who knows? That's just me speculating. So, Monica Renee Bowie was 33 years old when she went missing on July 5th, 2007. She is a black female, 5'4", 135 pounds. She was last seen wearing a dark green dress shirt and blue jeans. Monica was wearing braces at the time of her disappearance, and she has pierced ears. If you have any information on the disappearance of Monica Bowie, you can call the DeKalb County Police Department at 770-724-7850. Monica has been missing for 16 years, and would be 49 years old today. I will say I think it was on Reddit, that they had found the remains of someone that they thought might be her, but it didn't have braces, and she had braces, which made me think, like, how does that work? Like, do they stay on your teeth? Because your teeth remain, because they're bone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if they've, I'm morbid, so I think about things like that. So, now that we finished part two, those were the cases of Dima Shaw, Dee Dee Cullens, Marcy Crane / Peterson, and Monica Bowie. So, Rob, I want to know your thoughts. What do you think happened to all these ladies?
Sounds like they got caught up in some shit, and I don't know. In some instances, like I feel like a lackadaisical police work, or just like, I don't know, like,
But they fell through the cracks.
yeah. It just
Yeah.
seems very unfortunate. I think Monica was straight murked.
Yeah, they're on Reddit. There were a lot of people that think that people higher up in that felt like she knew too much,
No,
and
she
that,
was a loose end. That's what I was thinking the whole time. I was like, well, they tied up that loose end.
right, and that she may have been willing to divulge to get out of what had happened to her, which is shitty. So, I mean, they couldn't find a connection between Jasper and the other people, but he had to have been connected. Like, he had the car that they saw driving off that he then burned. So again, like, why would you burn it unless you were trying to burn up evidence of some sort? And so, at least he's in prison now for murdering a different person. What I wonder though is, so when I was looking for different cases, I went to the Charlie Project's website and I looked at missing women in Georgia. And so I narrowed it down to this list, and that's how I found the connection between Dee Dee and Marcy. I think I mentioned in the last episode, it was a random article I read that talked about all the different things they had in common. And so I was like, oh, that's cool. And then Monica's I thought was interesting because she was legit like kidnapped. And it wasn't until I really got into it that I realized, like, oh shit, like she was connected in some way to real estate. So it's just, it makes me wonder if they were all operating in the same universe, because Atlanta's a big place, but
Yeah.
I mean, it's also, I'm
Like
sure the
6 degrees of separation type shit.
right. And again, with Mark, I wish I knew more about real estate so it would make sense, but basically he was getting kickbacks. And from what I understand about what Marcy was doing, that's how she had always had money, because she was getting kickbacks from something with the mortgages.
Yeah.
So that's just, I don't know, that's very interesting connection there. But sadly, I'm doubtful that we will ever know anything about any of these cases. I closed up my iPad as if I'm done, and we're not done. And I've only done this 17 times. I don't remember the exact outro. So thank you all so much for listening to the It's Murder Y'all podcast. As always, sources for this episode will be listed in the show notes. Please subscribe, rate, review, tell a friend, tell your mama. We'll see y'all next week. Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.
See y'all.